Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pot of thunder and rock and roll, and today, my old friend Perry Saturn is here, a good friend of mine. I've known him since about 1994. He's a little bit down on his luck these days. He's hit some hard times. He needs some help, and we're going to try and help him out. He's a great storyteller. Got a lot of good tales to tell. And as a result of listening to Perry on today's show, I want you to do me a favor and then help my old friend Perry Saturn out. I want you to go to GoFundMe.com/Perry Saturn. GoFundMe.com/Perry Saturn. If you want to throw a couple bucks his way, help him get him back on his feet. He posted a video the other day. Looks like he's in danger of losing his home, and he's got some problems, but nothing that we can't band together as a family here, the Talk is Jericho family, and help Perry out. So please, GoFundMe.com/Perry Saturn, and give him what you can so he can get back on his feet and get his life back in order. Great guy. Like I said, very entertaining, and he really tells it like it is, too. He's got no filter. He's got no problems calling people out that he thinks treated him wrong. He's got a lot of great stories about the highs and lows of his life in WCW, WWE, how his career got derailed by drug abuse. He hit rock bottom in a big way back in the mid-2000s, but he managed to get himself cleaned up and is sober to this day, which is great. He's telling his whole story. Like I said, the highs and lows. He's not mincing words. He's laying it all out there about being homeless, digging through trash cans for food, working for his drug dealers as a debt collector just so he can support his own habit. I mean, this guy's been through it all, so it's great to have him back kind of in the land of the living. Nobody knew where he was for years. People thought he was dead, but he's back, and he was a great performer, too. He's got some excellent stories about his years in the business. Remember Moppy? How about that one? The Moppy gimmick in the WWE? You hear what inspired that. And about the dress match that he had with me, Loser Must Wear a Dress, and he lost. And I think he kind of wanted to. So we hear all about that. Perry's also talking about his late, great, close friends, Eddie Guerrero and Chris Benoit. What it was like when they all left WCW together to come to WWE. The Radicals, remember that? In the middle of the Monday Night Wars. So Perry Saturn's on the way. You're not gonna forget this one. But first, I want to tell you about another old wrestling friend of mine. Someone Perry also knew quite well. They used to run together back in the day, Diamond Dallas Page. And you know what I'm going to say next? The same thing I say every time. I'm going to encourage you to give Dallas's DDPY program a try, okay? It's an amazing way to get your health and fitness on track for the year. And now's the perfect time to get started thanks to this tremendous deal that Dallas is offering. Christmas may be over, but Dallas's generous spirit is not, because right now, you can get 25% off all DDPY merch and swag. And when you buy a max pack or a combo pack, you'll get a second for 50% off. That's after the 25% you already got. You understand? It's like 75% off. That's a huge, amazing deal. And it's so worth it. I just want you to go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho. And remember, when you buy the DDPY DVDs, you also get 3 months for free of the DDP Yoga Now app. And the app's got everything on it. I do all my yoga on apps now, on his app now. And you know what DDPY has done for me and so many other people. The list goes on and on and on, both in the business and out of the business, music business, acting, everything, and everyone in between. Plumbers, lawyers, physicians, ditch diggers, whatever it may be. It's very, very easy to do. And once you get locked in and get your mind rolling, you will feel the benefits of DDP yoga. Everyone's doing DDPY. And with the app, you can do DDPY anytime, anywhere, any place, right from your phone or your tablet. Remember, the app not only lets you do all the workouts right from your phone, also has a bunch of other cool features to help you get on that path to healthy living. And DDP Yoga Now app subscribers will never get bored doing the same workouts over and over again, because DDP has added completely new 2.0 workouts and weekly live workouts from the DDP Yoga Performance Center. And like I said, you can get 25% off all DDPY merch and DVDs, and buy a max pack or a combo pack and get a second for 50% off. It's the biggest sale ever on the DDPY program, so take advantage of it and get on the path to healthier living today. Just go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho. That's all you got to do to take advantage of this great deal. ddpyoga.com/Jericho, ddpyoga.com/Jericho, ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Change your life and do it today. Perry Saturn is here, and before we get into it with Perry, I just want to tell a pretty cool story from this weekend. We had a show in Wichita, Kansas at 1 p.m., which is rare. Usually the shows are at 7:30, you know, especially on a Saturday night, but apparently there was a Wichita Thunder game, and they were playing that night, so we took the 1 o'clock slot. So I was planning on going to that game and kind of hanging out, and then I got a call that the Red Hot Chili Peppers were playing in Tulsa, which is about a 2.5 hour drive away. So, as you all know, Chad Smith, good friend of mine, a Talk is Jericho alumni, did a great interview here a few months ago when the new Peppers album, The Getaway, came out. I called him up and found out that he was indeed playing. And so I have been wanting to see the Chili Peppers for years. I've never seen them live. They're one of my favorite bands of all time. So what a perfect way to do this. So I finished the show in Wichita, killed it. Main event, of course, tag team match, Owens and Jericho versus Reigns and Rollins. I took a shower, got in the car, and drove. Got to Tulsa at about 7:30, hooked up with some of the dudes that were going to the show, and we all headed over to the Peppers concert. Had a nice box up in the BOK Center, the Box Center, since we were going to be there the next day. So thanks to the Box Center for hooking us up. So it was me, Big Cass, and Strowman. Sasha went. Who else is there? Bailey was there. Matt Hanrahan, our production manager for the live shows. Rusev, Lana. It was a great time and seeing the band just kill it. And the thing that's cool about the Peppers is that they play a different set list every night, a very different set list, a very, very diverse on the songs they play. And I was talking to Chad after, he said they probably know about 70 songs and they kind of just play the ones that Anthony Kiedis wants to play. So we had a great time that night, went out with Chad after, and it's funny because I posted a picture of Chad and I smoking and got huge heat for that. But just keep this in mind. When I do drink, and sometimes if I have a cigarette, it's because I like the taste of it. I don't inhale it. And I just like having one or two when I'm out sometimes. And the best part was that Chad had in his dressing room, he had two packs of cigarettes, American Spirit cigarettes. That was his rider. No deli tray, no alcohol, just two packs of smokes. So we went out, had a great time, and then the next day, Chad came to our show, which was his first time seeing a WWE show. So it was kind of like I went and saw the Peppers for the first time on Saturday. He went and saw the WWE show on Sunday, and I got to meet everybody. And Chad's just a great guy, if you remember him talking on Talk is Jericho. So it was really cool to have him involved and have him at the show. And just one of those really, really awesome, just last-minute moments that just takes place. And some kind of one of the perks of being on the road sometimes when you get the total great timing. Like I said, how we not had that 1 o'clock show, I never would have got to see it, but I saw it. They were great. Go see the Chili Peppers when you can. Favorite song was probably the beginning. Was great. They just do this jam and they went right into Can't Stop, which was awesome. I love that. So it was a lot of fun. Great times. Thanks to Chad. Thanks to the BOK Center for setting us up. And thanks to the guys I had an amazing match with on Raw on Monday night. It was me, Owens, and Strowman versus Zayn, Rollins, and Reigns. Just one of those magical nights, man. The crowd was insane. We didn't really put a lot into the match beforehand as far as preparing. Called a lot of it in the ring. Had a great finish. And the crowd was just off the charts. So it's one of the reasons I said this on Instagram. One of the reasons why I still love doing this is for nights like that, when all the fruit lines up and all the numbers come up and you kind of hit the jackpot. And it was such a rush and such a buzz. And so just had a great time in Little Rock. So thanks everybody in Little Rock. It was an awesome weekend. So very excited about the next few months. Got a lot of projects coming up, a lot of great WWE stuff. Still be here doing as many shows as I can. Signed a new contract this week, which is cool. Working on new Fozzy gigs, which we're putting together as we speak right now, and recording the new Fozzy record. 3 songs are in the can. I think you're going to love that. And got Talk Is Jericho is growing. The Jericho Network got some great new shows on tap. And of course, I've also got some. I got 3 Hollywood projects that are kind of rolling right now. So busy, busy time, but I'm always busy, but I'm never too busy to talk with you twice a week. And very excited to bring to you my old friend. I've known him for 23 years, and he needs some help. So we're gonna spend some time with a great cat, Perry Saturn.
Talk Is Jericho.
So I don't know when the last time I saw you, Perry. 10 years ago, maybe.
I think maybe less than that at the Minneapolis at the.
Oh yeah, right.
You know, just for a minute, you know.
Yeah.
And for a Raw or something was there, you know.
You came down.
Yeah, it came up actually, because I live a couple hours south of Minneapolis, you know.
But it's funny though, because there's certain guys in your career that, like, for example, at the beginning of my career, I probably spent more time with you from about 94 to probably 98, 99 than most other guys. Like, we were really close for that 5-year period.
Always together, right?
Yeah,
it just seemed like we worked the same spot, same place.
We started out in Japan, and then we ended up in ECW, then ended up in WCW, and it was like kind of followed each other from place to place pretty much at the same time.
Yeah, and it just worked out good. Well, you're a hard worker. You know, I'm a big fuck up, but I was a hard
you're
worker.
You're always hard worker, though.
You know what I mean? So, you know, they're hard working guys. They click together, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, and that's just why we've been lucky to work these places together. And sometimes like ECW, and even our time in WCW, we were making a big impact, you know, to where our work was paying off for us and the company. So we were fortunate enough to be there at that time, you know, instead of being there at a time, you know, when guys were, you know, I don't want to do this, or I don't want to do, you know,
our generation of guys were all working hard.
Yeah, and it paid off, like, for us, our group, you know. And what a pain in the ass we had to be for the top guys, right? Because they wanted the coast and just cruise, and we didn't care. And honestly, we'd have worked each other every night and not gave a shit what the main event was. You know what I mean? Like, if they weren't, because they didn't want to work with us.
Specifically in WCW, that was kind of the thing,
absolutely,
right?
Yeah, WCW. Not WWE, was totally different.
Yeah, and ECW is different, obviously.
WCW, totally different, the top guys. And they were really threatened by us.
Mm-hmm.
And
What do you think they were threatened by? The fact that we were working so hard?
The fact that that we were getting a push and making the most out of the push.
Mm-hmm.
And their what they would consider norm wasn't going to fly anymore. You know, I worked with Luger at the Universal taping.
Yeah, damn.
He tells me, you know, he goes, I'll never forget it. He goes, Perry, he goes, I don't want this to come off the wrong way. He goes, but this is Universal. You do all them goofy suplex things, and I really don't want to do that. So what should we do? You know, and I of course, hung over, not gotten any sleep, strung out. I go, well, I don't know, Lex. I only do goofy suplexes. And I walked away. You know, but
Did you end up having the match with him?
Oh, no, yeah, we had the match. We had the match, and he's very awkward to work with and stuff. He didn't shoot with me. I didn't shoot with him. We worked, you know, and like, I don't know what he thought. Never once have I just grabbed somebody and have them not want me to bump them and just throw them around, you know?
Yeah.
So if he could do the walk and pose and then maybe bump me a couple times to go home, that would have been all right for him. And I wasn't going to go for that. You know, he was going to have to work with me.
Well, especially when you're talking about working in Universal and working against Luger, because when we were in WCW, for example, we mostly just worked with each other.
Yeah.
Like, you get a couple times when you might get out of the kind of the box that we're all in. But working Luger for you is probably a pretty big deal. You know, he's a top, top guy.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was just had the time there when Eric Bischoff discussed with me and Terry Taylor, who had a boy, what a shit job he had, happened to be the booker there when all these guys had their own separate deals going on and stuff.
Yeah, the booker to an extent. Yeah.
You know, and Eric just told him, I'm going to make money with Perry. I want Perry taken care of.
Oh, wow.
So, and then Eric tells me, now, Perry, part of me making sure you're taken care of is you taking care of yourself too. You know, to be the top guy, you got to act like a top guy. Mm-hmm. So now you're not going to put me in a match with Luger where I just had this talk with Eric and bump me all over the place, you know, and just job me out. I'm not going to go for that,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm. So, you had a good relationship with Eric. He was a supporter of yours.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. Just by, through my relationship with Eric also got me in with Dean and Chris, you know, like it was during our little thing with the dress match, you know, and I didn't want to end it. You know, I wanted to go on, you know, longer. It was stupid to not have you work because you were leaving. Right.
Right.
You know, I was trying to explain to Eric and being hot headed and, you know, probably strung out. He turned and I grabbed him by the arm and I go, wait a minute. Don't just walk away from me right in the middle of a sentence. Mm-hmm. I did that in the locker room full of boys. I don't know. I don't think. It's just I would never do that to him, and I wasn't going to let him do it to me.
Right.
And he goes, do you know who you're talking to? I go, yeah, I'm talking to the boss who should have enough respect to at least hear me out and tell me my idea sucks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He started listening to me and started, you know, and just, you know, and then Dean and them would come up to me. I can't believe you did that. But I don't know. I always had that problem where I just didn't think like.
But you earned his respect because you weren't a yes man sort of
thing. And I would never disrespect you or him where, okay, Perry, I'm thinking this is me. And I would never go, yeah, okay, and just walk away.
Right, right.
And he was the boss. If he would hear me out and go, okay, I don't like that. This is what you have to do. I would have done it, and I would have did it the best I could do it.
Right, sure.
But don't just dislike what I say doesn't matter. I just couldn't do
show
that,
the respect.
You know. And just, you know, I had no problem being told what to do. But if you're going to act like you're interested in what I'm saying, then you at least got to hear me out, you know.
Mm-hmm. So. Let's talk about that dress match that we had, because I like talking about, because let me tell you what I remember, and you tell me what you remember. I remember I was leaving, like you said, and one of the things was you and I were going to have a match where the loser has to wear a dress.
No.
Okay.
If I won, you were off of television.
Oh.
If you won, I had to wear the dress.
But that wasn't the original plan, though. Wasn't the original plan for me to put me in a dress to, like, embarrass me or something like that?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, gotcha.
I think I'm... Because you were off of Nitro, because I had long arguments with Eric about this. Doesn't it make more sense to have you put guys over
right.
if you're definitely leaving? But his thought was you weren't going to... he wasn't going to invest any television time in you.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And you, I thought, came up with the idea that if you went over, I wear the dress, because there had to be some balance. If I went over, you're off of TV.
Right.
So there, I had to be putting up something, some jeopardy for me. So if you go over, then I have to wear the dress.
See, I was always under the assumption that the idea that Sullivan wanted to put me in the dress and you wanted to do the Marilyn Manson thing, so you came up with the idea of like...
I came up with the Marilyn Manson thing after I got to wear the dress.
Oh.
I had no idea that I was going to get to wear the... like, even wear the dress. I was just trying... I was trying to get Eric to keep you on TV. To me, I thought, well, that's a good opponent.
Sure.
For two pay-per-views instead of one.
Yeah. Because
you could be there for two more pay-per-views. Eric just wanted to sit you at home and not use you.
Which is exactly what he did after a while.
Yeah. But, and that makes no sense. Mm. And I'll give Kevin Nash, I think, gets the credit for that. Because that pay-per-view all the way at the pay-per-view, I was going over. We show up to the pay-per-view, and Eric isn't there. He's hunting.
Oh, jeez.
And Kevin goes, well, what are you guys doing, Perry? And I go, well, I know what Eric wants. He goes, no, I didn't ask what Eric wants. What are you guys doing? He goes, I kind of think it'd be cool to see you in a dress. And I go, yeah, me and Chris think it'd be cool to see me in a dress, too. And he goes, okay, that's the finish. If there's any heat, I take it.
Can you imagine?
Thinking of Vince.
Right.
You know, like, I have nothing but positive things to say about Vince. He's never done anything to me that these horror stories you hear.
Right.
You know what I mean? I couldn't imagine Vince saying, this is the finish. And for whatever the reason is, him not there, us going, okay, no, let's do the opposite.
Yeah.
I just couldn't imagine that. And that's exactly what we did. The next day was Nitro, and I waited for Eric to come up to me and say something about me in the dress. And Eric came up to me and he goes, oh, looks like you had a bad weekend, huh? That was it. That was all that was said to me. Like,
but that just kind of shows you how the company just would go down. Because probably when he showed up, he probably was like, Perry wants to wear a dress. Well, fine. Let him wear a dress then. Not even having any issues with the fact that we completely changed the entire thing. You know?
Absolutely. The gap there between leadership and one of the things I use that I tell everybody about, I had the first match with Goldberg that was Goldberg had to put in time.
Oh, wow.
And we did 12 minutes. And we pushed it, and it was the first, and it was the pay-per-view match in Colorado's, you know, Colorado
Springs.
Yep. Stampede. To where they took me off of the road and had me go to the power plant to work with Goldberg till he got comfortable doing this. One, that's ridiculous to take me off the road. But anyways, the idea was that when he got to work with some of the top guys, he's going to have to do more than 2 minute squash matches. So, and Terry Taylor said that he thought, Terry was a fan of mine, you know, he thought that that I could get a match out of him. You know, and he said, I'd want 15, you know, but no less than 10. And we ended up doing 12 minutes. But anyways, I go over this with Bill. You don't have to worry about making Bill look strong because he's going to, in his own mind, right?
Yeah, right.
So we are walking to the, getting ready to go to the ring. They're playing my music. Kevin Sullivan and JJ walk up to Bill. I'm walking to the ring, and I hear them telling Bill, remember, you're Bill Goldberg. You can't sell. Can you imagine that ordeal that I had to go through, you know?
And you're going to the ring now. You don't even know what they're saying to him.
But I hear him telling right. As I'm going, I don't even get a chance to say, listen to what Eric wants. Because Eric got Bill and asked Bill if he would work with me, that he wants him, that he has to start putting in time. It was like getting Bill's permission if I was somebody he would sell for that amount of time. And Bill, oh, no, I respect him. I'd work with him, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, of course, out there, I have to argue with him in the match, and I'm potatoing the shit out of him because what people don't know, Bill's not tough. Bill's not tough. He's a big, strong, muscle kid, and he bought a Ultimate Fight type dojo. And since he owned it, he assumed, you know, he thinks that made him a shooter. So Bill's not tough. He's strong. He kicked me so hard in the sternum, you know, that I thought a horse kicked me. But tough, he's not.
Right.
To where I had to really get into it with him and tell and make him sell, which is so unnecessary, right?
Right.
It's a choppy, it looks bad. We get to the back, Bill gets to the back and collapses. They have to get the ambulance.
Why?
That's how blown up he is. I'm blown up, I'm mad, bloody mouth or something. I want to kill JJ, you know. I'm not a fan of JJ's anyways.
Right.
And I just can't believe, but that's, you know, I come to the back and Eric puts me over and gives me a $100,000 raise.
Really? Wow.
So now I'm not quite as mad at JJ, but it still shouldn't have happened, right?
Right.
And that's how that, you and I should have never even thought about switching a finish.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Thinking about, like you said, putting in perspective working for Vince afterwards, there's no way. You would not get through the gorilla without being fired, fined, you know, whatever it could be, told to leave the building.
Let alone the ref would know what the finish was to get him to do the finish you want.
That's right. Yeah.
I don't know if you remember this. We were doing a little match for Raw at Madison Square Garden.
Mm-hmm.
Vince is always a little hyped up there, you know. And we're going to shoot this pre-tape. And Vince calls us over with the PA there. I don't know who it is. And you go, okay, so what? Perry's mad at me. I'm mad at him. We're going to go blah, 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 blah. And then that's the end, right? And Vince goes, okay, yeah, get ready. We're going to do it. And the PA goes, that was it. And sent us out live. Yeah. And he fired him right there.
That's right.
Yes.
I forgot about that. Yeah, they didn't tell us that we were on the air.
No. And you literally went like, so Perry's mad, and I'm mad, and blah, blah, blah. And then... Right? And the guy goes, yeah, that's it. And Vince fired him. And I just remember, because of the garden, you have to walk down that ramp. And Vince screaming at him as he's dragging his feet walking down that ramp.
I specifically remember this. Ba, 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 ba. Like, yes. That's exactly what I said.
You go, ba, ba, ba. Like,
that's so crazy. But once again, like you said, that's the... In WCW, we never really know who the boss was.
No.
You know, I mean, Eric was the boss, quote unquote, but then Sullivan's the booker, and then Terry's in there, and then Hogan's in there, and then Savage and Hall and Nash. Paige had a lot of influence. So we didn't really know who to go to. You know, he didn't like something, tough luck, you know, deal with it.
For a Nitro match, I'm working with Bam Bam. They give us the finish, me beating Bam Bam. Bam Bam looks right at Sullivan and goes, no, I'm not doing that. And I go, wait a minute, what do you mean you're not? He goes, no, I'm not doing that finish. We just did a finish like that. I'm not doing it. And, Sullivan goes, okay, you hear that, Perry? He doesn't want to put you over, and he leaves. We ended up getting a fist fight in the locker, in the
really?
Room. Yep. And he ended up putting me over because of Eric, I was Eric's boy, kind of, you know?
Yeah.
But later on, Bam Bam explained it to me. It wasn't that he didn't want to put me over. It was that they were doing the exact same finish where Canyon goes to do something, and he gets f***ed, and he didn't want to do the finish. But Sullivan just stirred it up and left the room.
Right.
I'm like, what do you mean you're not going to put me over?
And you guys end up getting into a fight.
Because I punched him right in the face. Yeah. And he's not going to back down from me, you know. And later he asked me, he goes, I don't know what, because Paige, you know, the great mediator, comes in to calm us down, you know, because we're doing me and Benoit against Paige and Bam Bam, you know. Mm. And Bam goes, I don't know what you're so pissed off about. I go, what do you mean? What if I decide all of a sudden I'm not going to put you over? That's not going to rub you the wrong way? And he's, no, that's not what I was saying. But that's what Sullivan believe.
Right.
And just lit the fire and walked out.
Yeah, just totally stirring it up, like you said.
Yeah, an agent can't do that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's... When me, Chris, Dean, and Eddie left, our big bitch was Vince Russo was the booker, and we're working whatever the match is, and we're going over. Sullivan or Mike Graham would be the agent. They'd switch the finish and have us do the job. Not knowing any better, we just go do the job. We come back, Vince Russo would go, why did you guys do the job? Well, that's because that's what the agent told us to do.
Wow.
And then they get Sullivan, and Sullivan goes, well, that just made more sense to me. And that was like...
But that's not what was supposed to happen.
Correct.
Right.
And that's where I got into the, you know, Mike Graham pulled the knife out on me. And
so tell us that story, because this thing is, the four of you guys, Benoit, Eddie, Perry, and Dean, you're basically allowed to walk out on your WCW contract and go to WWF, which at the time there still was a war.
Yeah.
And those are four big-name, talented guys just leaving.
I had... 3 years on my WCW contract. Them guys had 4 years. They just signed. So that we were stuck. Mike Graham in the hot-headed little... I think of him like the Foghorn Leghorn cartoon and the little... the little rooster that wants to fight everyone.
Come on, come on.
Yeah, that's they stir him up. Mm-hmm. So they got him all worked up, you know, about because I went to Bill Bush and flipped out. You
over
know,
these finishes being changed, yeah.
Like if I perceive something's wrong, I'm gonna say something. I have that mental disorder. Yeah. If I know something's wrong and you're f***ing me deliberately, and I have no proof of this, my guess is it was all with Nancy and Chris, you know.
That Sullivan had a vendetta against you guys,
what I
sure.
Mean, we were guilty by association.
Yeah.
But so I went to Bill Bush, and then Mike Graham come up to me, and he told me, he goes, did you guys go to Bill Bush? I go, well, yeah, I went to Bill Bush. He goes, and what'd you say that you don't want Sullivan? I go, Sullivan or you as our agent anymore. He literally pulled a pocket knife out. And he goes, you know, I will cut one of your throats, blah, blah. And I go,
what?
I go, really?
Wow.
I got the police right there in the building when you're in Cincinnati. And I go, he's threatening my life with a knife. I want charges pressed. We called I can't remember the guy's name for Turner Sports. And I had my attorney
like
call
Harvey,
him.
Like Harvey, was that Harvey, whatever
he's a black guy.
Okay.
And I can't remember. And I had my attorney call him and tell him that they're providing an unsafe work environment, that we're not working there, and we're suing the company.
Mm.
Within 24 hours, we all had complete releases from our contracts, the only stipulation being that we couldn't say anything negative about WCW on television.
Mm-hmm.
We spoke with Vince about it, and Vince goes, well, that's okay. Yeah, he goes, I'll have Cactus say all the negative shit.
Have Foley say it all?
Yeah.
So did you guys have any type of conversations with WWE before you were released?
No.
Okay.
No. Once he pulled the knife out and we knew we were getting released, then we did.
Who did you call?
Jeff Merrick was my internet guy, you mm-hmm. know, and he was in tight with
Jeff Merrick from Toronto.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, he was in tight with what do you call it, Brother Love, Bruce
Pritchard. Yeah,
Bruce Pritchard. And so I spoke to Bruce Pritchard on the phone a few times, and then Bruce said, well, if you want to come to New York, we'd love to sit down and talk with you guys. Originally it was me, Dean, Chris, Eddie, Shane, Conan, and Ray.
Oh, okay.
Vince didn't want Conan, Ray, but would take him. Wouldn't take Shane for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So
Shane had been there and had his issue.
And
yeah.
Had some issues. While we were talking with Bruce, Shane was going behind our back talking with Bill Bush, telling him, no, don't worry, I'll get this calmed down. They're staying. Mm. So it was kind of, you know, but we were going and...
Why didn't he not want Conan and Ray at the time?
I don't know.
Didn't know them.
Gotcha. He just said that they would take him if the deal depended on it.
But you were the four that he wanted.
Yeah.
Right.
And then I talked to Eddie and, you know, who was like, oh, I don't know, brother, whatever we're doing, just let me know. You know, we were talking with Bill Bush and Eddie comes walking in and Dean goes, Eddie, we just quit. We got to go. And Eddie goes, well, all right, let me get my bag. He didn't even know what was going on.
Didn't even care, right?
No.
He just was sticking with you guys.
Yeah. So, and wow, we had, and this, that was the group he wanted was us. So, mm-hmm. and, Conan and Ray would have stayed or went, I believe. Mm-hmm. And he didn't want Shane, and Shane didn't want to go.
Gotcha.
Shane was doing everything he could do to stay.
Right.
So push came to shove. We went, you know. And,
well, you grew up was it Cleveland you grew up?
Yeah, but I'm Boston.
Boston guy, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously, that's more WWE territory. I'm sure, was your end game to work with WWE?
Yeah,
was that kind
absolutely.
Of always a goal of yours?
Yeah, that's where you want, you know, that was the that was the best place to be.
Yeah.
Especially as a young adult watching the Saturday night main events, you know. Oh, I wanted to do that so bad. I went to one pay-per-view growing when I was there. I was a young adult, was Survivor Series.
Oh, okay.
So that's, you know, man, that was where I wanted to be. And it just seemed like WWE, you're going to be judged by your merits, by your work, mm-hmm. not by, like, literally, I think that we were guilty by association because of Chris. Otherwise, I really have no idea what the hell was going on there. You know what I mean? Me and Benoit just won the tag titles in WCW. And Eric grabbed me and he said, hey, listen, he goes, I want to make sure you guys are taken care of. I'm missing some shows coming up. He goes, if there's any problem, here's my number. Give me a call. He goes, because I want to make sure they do this the right way, you know. And I tell him, okay. I go, well, what do you want done? He goes, I want you and Chris in tag matches going over. That's what I want done. I said, okay. So we get to a TV, like Thunder, you know, in their war rooms, the bus, you know, when they had, do you remember when they had them buses?
Yeah, and the war room, just so people know, it would be like the booking office, yeah. where all the writing would get
done.
So
it was, yeah. Sullivan, and he had me and Chris in singles, one of us like me doing a job to Sid, Chris doing a job to Macho Man. So we just beat Paige and Bam Bam for the tag titles. So, it must have been a Nitro then, because we just did it the day before.
Gotcha.
And so here's our first showing as the tag team champions. He has us. And so I go, Kevin, I go, I don't want to sound like that guy, but Eric told me he wants us in tag matches going over. He goes, well, he didn't tell me that. And he's not here. So unless you know how to get a hold of him, this is what you're doing. I called Eric on the phone. I explained to him, and he goes, give that mother the phone. I go, walked on the bus. I go, excuse me, Kevin, here, it's Eric. His face. And they had to put us in a tag match.
He must have been thinking like, oh yeah, there's no way he's got this guy's number.
Because he's out hunting or wherever the Eric disappears.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so that's where I can see me getting heat.
Mm-hmm. Sure, of course.
You know, with him, but it wasn't. I still was being punished for something that wasn't mine, anyways. Mm-hmm. You know, so we did. We worked with the Varsity Club, right? So I do a run in on Robbie Steiner, and he lights me up. So afterwards, he comes up to me and he goes, "Everything all right?" I go, "Yeah, sure, everything's fine, Robbie." So. Booker T comes around the corner, and Booker T screaming, what the fuck, Steiner? That's bullshit. You know, what am I going to do? I'm going to fight him every night. And how it ends up, it ends up, yeah. Right? So Robbie, Booker gets on him. And I know Robbie kind of, you know, like I've been out a couple times. And once his wife was stuck out, and I made sure she got back to the hotel and shit.
Gotcha.
So Robbie comes up to me and he goes, hey, he goes, tell me if this is true. And I go, okay. I go, what, you beat the shit out of me for no reason? He goes, no. He goes, Sullivan said that you guys tried to get Hacksaw fired. I said, what? I go, I never tried to get anybody fired a day in my life.
And Hacksaw, of all people, the nicest guy, right?
Yeah. I go, no, that's not true. But that's what was going on behind the scenes.
So they were telling Steiners this so they would go out there and shoot on you?
Yeah.
Why?
Sullivan.
Guilt by association.
So, and Sullivan go, you know, and Robbie goes, hey, he goes, if that was stiff, I'm sorry. I go, you know, it was stiff. Mm-hmm. I go, but it's all right. I'm all right. If that's how you want to work, it's just going to be shitty matches.
Right.
And you're going to have better matches working with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know
mm-hmm.
what I mean? And that was it. But it was Sullivan, you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, like, just stirring
part
it up.
Of their
right, yeah.
Shit, you know what I mean?
Talk is Jericho.
What did you think when you went to the WWE for the first time after being in WCW? And
well, kind of like what I thought wrestling was supposed to be like, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and even I think that there's going to be cliques everywhere. Just, you know, me and you like each other. We're going to hang out more than me and some Brian Christopher.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't the types of cliques to where me and you like each other. So we're going to make sure that motherfucker. Doesn't do anything.
Yeah, bearing
right?
everybody.
You know,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I have no problem with, because there's groups of guys that I couldn't stand to sit and talk to. But I would never go to somebody, he's an asshole, no. I don't want to, you know. It was just business first, right? How many guys am I friendly with just because it was good business?
Right. But let's talk about when you guys first came in as the Radicals, because there was a big push for you guys.
Yeah,
it's like a big rumble, like, oh my God, they're coming out of the stands.
And everybody was helpful and cool, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? And it was, just totally different to where WCW, they would circle the wagons and try to find ways to trip us up.
Yeah.
Because WCW there was unquestionably the two class society, and the top guys, you know, and I'm not saying not one of them did something to me individually, but the Luger, Macho, Hogan, Page,
Hall
and Nash, right? Flair.
Mm-hmm.
They were in a group, and it didn't matter if working with me would improve the card. They didn't care. They didn't want to let me in their group. Where WWE, if working with me would improve the card, they wouldn't give a fuck about any group. They want to improve the card.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That must have been kind of cool, though, coming in with Chris and Eddie and Dean. You guys were like a gang, right?
Yeah, it was absolutely way cool, man. Way cool. And it was like historical what we did.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So
the four of you come together, because at that point in time, there's only a few, like us WCW guys. I think Sho would come in by himself. Then I'd come in about 6 months later by myself. But like, I had no friends there. I mean, you make friends, but
yeah,
but
I know.
There was a target on my back because I was on my own.
Yeah.
Then you guys all came in together, and finally it's like, oh, some other friends have shown up. The cavalry has arrived.
Yeah.
And then there was a couple of the guys after that, and finally it was no big deal. But that wrestling war period was a real thing.
Yeah, absolutely. We didn't give a shit who we worked with, right?
Yeah.
There'd be WWE guys who were strictly WWE guys, and to them, we were the WCW guys.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Did you know, you knew Triple H from you guys were in Qualcy's camp together, right?
Yeah. I known him forever. Matter of fact, the only person that I've known longer than you is him.
Okay.
You know what I mean? I've known him forever.
Did that help you a little bit when you came in?
No, Paul and I were going to go to Memphis together just many, many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And right as we were getting ready to leave, he did a Gold's Gym convention thing. And Flair got, you know, seen him and offered him the job at WCW.
Gotcha.
I wanted to make sure that he always looked at me as his friend, not as somebody wanting something.
Gotcha.
So I would go out of my way to make sure I never asked him for anything.
Let's talk about your relationship with Eddie and Chris, because what happened was, like, because you left the company in 04 and then kind of, we'll talk a little about these issues that you had. Did you know when Eddie and Chris passed away? Where were you at that point in time?
When Chris passed away, I was in a crack house.
Wow.
Getting high, and somebody told me, hey, did you see that some wrestling guy died, you know, and that's how I found out about Chris.
Wow.
So Eddie, when he passed away, I was at one of the moments where I was trying to be sober. So I was struggling with it, and Sonny Ono told me about Eddie. You know,
did that affect your attempts to be sober and get clean? Or did it hurt you? Was it just another guy?
I don't think so. I want to say it did.
Yeah,
but it, you know what I mean. I relapsed 3 or 4 times, you know, but relapsing is a process, part of the getting better, you know. So, and it's hard to, like, especially being poor is a hard life, man.
Mm-hmm.
And for a long, like, getting high didn't make my life, it didn't help me make any money, but it helped being poor. Mm. It helped making it a little easier, you know what I mean? And,
let's talk about this quickly, because I don't even really know this story. I'd always heard little snippets of it, but you, I hear you're talking, you worked ECW, straight into WCW, straight into WWE. That's the big leagues. And you said making money and being, you know, on TV and being famous and all these things. What happened to lead you to being in a crack house and being strung out?
Well, I was always f***ed up on, you know, struggling with this. One, I must have been just absolutely great at keeping it hidden.
You mean while you were working
and stuff, you know. So, and in WWE, I really had lost control to where it was affecting my day-to-day life.
Okay.
Now, you know, finally the drugs caught up to me. I wasn't,
was it pills or
pills and Demerol I was injecting.
Gotcha.
You know, and I wasn't a functional addict anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was becoming obvious with me, like at the arenas and shit, to where Paulie grabbed me, and Paulie asked me, he goes, hey, he goes, how you doing? And I go, I'm good, Paulie, I'm good. He goes, no, you know, how are you, Perry? I go, I'm good. He goes, Perry, he goes, you're sitting in a room with the lights off. How are you? And I go, no. He goes, hey, you know, the old man will help you if you ask for help. And at this point, it was time. I was like blacking out. I would, where I'd be in the ring and not even remember what the fuck I'm doing here.
Right.
It was to where I was waking up and not knowing where I'm at in hotel rooms and shit, you know, at home. I was screwed up all the time. And it was time to where I wasn't going to be able to hide it anymore. It was there, you know. And I was not giving a shit if I hide it anymore. So talking to Paulie, and I thought, you know, I was probably going to have to go to rehab. And I'm going to talk to Vince at Raw. That weekend, I blew out my knee. Now I'm home, still making money, but now I don't have to talk to Vince because I'm home.
Right.
And during that process, I just totally lost everything, you know, to where I was, you know. Now I'm buying Nubane,
right,
and I'm booting that all day long. And by time I was healing up from my knee surgery, I wouldn't have made it in the locker room for 1 minute.
Gotcha.
And I'm so lucky, like, I was recovering from the knee surgery. I lived in Atlanta, and Raw was in Atlanta. So I don't want to, I had carried my bag of, a toiletry bag with all my Nubane and shit in it. I don't want to carry this around with me. Like, I'm worried that somebody's, you know, somebody's going to catch notice. So not rationally thinking, I take my syringe and I put in 3 times as much Nubane as I ever do.
Wow.
And I figured I'll get good and f***ed up, and by the time I'm come down enough to where I need to get high, I'll come home. So I always inject it under my tongue so I don't leave track marks.
Wow.
I wrestled in trunks. I can't have track marks, you know what I mean? So I get in my car, my truck, and I'm going to go to the arena. It's August or something, July maybe, in Atlanta. I boot too much. I pass out. I wake up 3 or 4 hours later with my key in the ignition. I was just from turning my key away from being dead. Because my garage was closed.
Oh, you would have driven right into, yeah.
Or I would have passed
out. Carbon monoxide, yeah.
Carbon monoxide, yeah. Right. I would have passed out, you know.
Right.
And so I was, at this point, I really had no control. And I was going to have to get help, you know. I was gone. And then I lost my job. You know, they didn't renew my contract.
Okay.
So then it just kind of, now, to help me deal with it, and now I'm all right, and I just started doing more and more, and now I'm smoking crack, I'm doing meth, I'm booting meth, I'm getting anything I can get.
Wow, so just the kind of a downward spiral.
Spiral just by shit luck.
Right.
And then, which makes it even worse now, my drug habit was enabled by the fact that sometimes I'm a scary dude.
Mm-hmm.
So now I was collecting debts for all the drug dealers.
Oh, wow.
And they were giving me all the drugs I could take. So, boom. Now, and I ended up losing everything. My car, my house, my wife OD'd on drugs.
Fran?
Yeah.
She passed away. Oh, really? Yeah. I did not know that.
Yeah, wow. Sitting right next to
me. Wow.
So.
Wow.
And I just kept going because I got her doing all the drugs with me, you know.
Gotcha.
So, and now my house got foreclosed on, my car got repossessed, and all I really give a shit about is getting high. I don't have any money, but I know if I go see this guy and he'll give me a couple of names, I'll go collect the money. I have no problem doing that.
Collecting money as in give me the money or I'll break your leg type shit, basically.
I had this deal. I don't know where I learned it. I think a guy in Boston taught me that. I take a, what do you call it, a 38, and you take the bullet, you pull the shell, dump out all the gunfire, put the shell back in there. Now it's basically nothing. I put the bullet in there, spin, pull the trigger, boom. By the time I get to the third bullet, you don't realize they're never going to go off. You shit money somehow.
Right.
To them, it looks like I'm going to shoot them.
Yeah.
And I don't know who taught me that, but somebody did, and I did that. And then if some guys would fight me, but I was just crazy as fucking, you know, just and badly needing my fix to where fighting me to them was a, you know, maybe they thought was a better way than dealing with, but it really wasn't, you know.
Now
I don't have a car, I don't have a house. I got my friends who I collect money for, you know, who keep giving me drugs.
And you're completely detached from the business at this point, too. Like, because I remember no one could find you.
I couldn't possibly imagine somebody seeing me.
Gotcha.
I couldn't. I would have died of shame. I couldn't possibly imagine somebody seeing me to what I've fallen to. To where if somebody recognized, I would get argue with them. No, I don't know who you're talking about. That's
right.
Not me. I couldn't imagine somebody seeing me, you know. Just couldn't. And, I was at rock bottom. Now I'm homeless. Sonny Ono moved me up to Iowa by him, you know, and try to help me get on my feet a little bit. He moved me to the meth capital of the U.S.
Oh, my gosh, right.
So I just kept tail spinning out.
So where are you living?
Right now I'm homeless.
No, now, but I mean at the time.
At the time I'm homeless.
But like just literally living on the street?
Street or in garage, somebody's garage. I have my dog that I had since she was a puppy, you know. That's all I have, you know, me and the dog. And I'm going from dealer's house to dealer's house. I'm collecting debt. I'm staying here, staying there. Some nights I'm sleeping outside. I spent one winter at an abandoned farm that 2/3 of the walls were down, but I built a little lean-to and stayed inside there because it's cold outside in Minnesota.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And it was like February, and my dog, she come over and she laid her head on my lap, you know, and just loves me. Mm-hmm. And I, at rock bottom, I can't do it anymore. You know, I'd rather be dead. But I can't let my dog, you know, then what happens to my dog?
Wow.
So I decide that when my dog dies, I'm going to commit suicide.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere in there, I started to get a little sober. Started becoming like forever, no matter what the headache, no matter who I had to hang around with, I did it to get high. Now it's starting to become a pain in the ass. I don't like this person. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do that. Now the drugs are losing the grip on me. And so, I don't know, I just sat there one day and thought, if I can hang on long enough to make sure my dog's all right and die after she dies, why can't I get sober?
Right.
And I started to do that and started to, you know, work for that, you know. My wife, who I have now, she's homeless on the streets, a drug addict, and I start letting her stay by me and stuff, you know, so nobody with her, telling her, you know, Atlanta.
You mean like sleep beside you on the street?
That's how it works. Yeah, you know, telling her, you don't have to give me nothing. I don't want nothing from you. But like some guys, they were beating her up. You know, that's how I met her, over $20, you know. And so I just kind of start, you know, taking care of her and start talking to her. And we decided to get clean together.
Wow.
And I would have made it getting clean no matter what, I think, because I'm just kind of like that. If I get something in my mind, I do it.
Right.
You know, but she helped make it easier because we were living at this abandoned farm. You know, she was staying out there with me. I didn't even have a car. She had an old beat up car. And if she was clean, her uncle in Albert Lea, Minnesota, told her that she could stay there. And she says, you know, well, if I do, this guy's got to stay with me. He's helping me out. So we moved into her uncle's house.
Gotcha.
And started to get sober together and stuff, you know. And
wow, that's incredible. So you helped each other to kind of get sober and get clean.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like it was destined to be, right?
Yeah, yeah. And like I would have got sober no matter what.
Sure.
Because I'm just that way. I think she would have, but I don't know if she says she wouldn't have. But I guarantee that now I wouldn't survive without her.
When you were on this, like living in this farmhouse, like you said, how are you eating?
There was a ship's factory in Mason City.
Oh, Iowa.
And they throw out the chips, big giants. We'd eat the chips. I've dug through trash for food.
Wow.
And I had to, whatever I ate, I had to share with my dog. She was a 130-pound dog, so, you know, she didn't eat. But that's just how it was, you know. And
Did your dog protect you at times? Was there ever times when someone was trying to mess with you and the dog?
No, I don't.
Gotcha.
I don't. One time, you know, because if you see your dog and, like, it's a sweetheart. I don't know if you have a dog.
Yeah.
To you, your dog's a sweetheart. Right. Never anything. She's an Italian Mastiff, 140 pounds.
Wow, yeah.
She would catch, you know, red bricks. I could toss them underhand light. She would catch them.
Wow.
And I would go, f*** it up, and she'd crush it in her mouth. So yeah. She's just over a year old, and I'm walking her. This is in Atlanta when I still have my house. You know that noise that a dog's collar sounds? You know, I hear this noise and I'm like, oh, and turn, I look, and there's this pit bull running full speed at me.
Wow.
And I'm thinking, what am I going to do? I got to try to save my dog. Somehow she shot in between me and caught this dog. I've never seen anything. A drop and roll, and the dog's body, she killed the dog. She dropped and rolled three times, and her body would slam off the cement, and she crushed its head.
Wow.
And I thought she was just a baby, you know, but she was protecting me. So if I needed her, you know, she would have been,
yeah.
But now I have two pit bulls that I've rescued, you know, and, you know, they're pit bulls, so they're probably mean, you know, they're good people, they're good dogs. But people are afraid of them,
sure.
You know, and I can't see them as anything but these playful little things.
Yeah.
I imagine if they got your ass, they'd get you,
sure,
you know?
Sure, sure.
So.
What's kind of like the you know, being homeless? Is there kind of like a society? Like, how does it work? Do you all know each other? And
well,
is there a leader? Or?
Like, I don't know if there's a leader, but like in Atlanta, they all stay in under bridges down there, you know? And like, there's... in Albert Lea and stuff, there's shelters, but not a lot of people. You can get in the shelters, but there's a lot of, you know, you can't be doing drugs and stuff in the shelter for the night, you know, but still, when it's 30 below zero, you want to get in a shelter, you know, so they are a little, the bigger the city, the bigger the community, right?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, you asked what I eat, like, it wasn't like we were the only people that knew about the Nabisco. You know,
the chip factory. Yeah,
we weren't the only people that knew there. That they were always there. People getting them, you know, because that's common knowledge, you know. And it's a very shady, doggy dog type, you know. Like Lisa, my wife, for a woman, you know, that's a dangerous
situation
for her to be around. You know what I mean? And they're victimized all the time. Mm-hmm. So.
But to get out of that situation, I mean, that's huge, man. I mean, that's, like you said, that's your mental toughness and determination.
Yeah, and she helped. And right. We got, once I knew that I didn't want to get high anymore, then I won. You know, that's just how my mind is. I don't know. You know, like.
So you never had to go to rehab or anything?
Oh, no,
you just made up your mind?
No, never done any of that. I've been clean. And I relapsed three different times, you know. Once I relapsed for several months, like me and Lisa lived with her uncle, and we relapsed and can't live with her uncle. We're on drugs, so we were back out on the street. Got our shit together and got back in, you know. And last time I relapsed, while I was getting high, I was regretting getting high.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, I shouldn't have done it. This was stupid.
Yeah.
And once that happens, then you won. You know, once, you know, it just doesn't have the hold. And I'd like things to be better for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that getting high, they're not going to be any better to where before I could say, oh, at least I was high.
Right.
You know, I don't have that anymore. You know, like I got the medical issues I'm dealing with. I worked at this factory, you know, they were in Albert Lea when I was, and they made like telephone poles and stuff. And this Paul, it broke down and it crushed me. I had to get my shoulder, my right shoulder replaced. It
wow.
just crushed me. You know, so I have the metal.
This titanium and plate. Yeah,
and it's like not a bone anymore. It's a rod. And out of that settlement money, I took and I bought a house.
Gotcha.
A house that was foreclosed. Like being foreclosed, it was $30,000. It was like all my money. But I bought the house hoping that I'll at least have a roof over my head.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about that.
So, and...
Right.
So right now that I have a roof over my head, you know, like I still... Every week I get food at the Salvation Army. Otherwise, I don't eat, you know. And
do you ever think about doing like autograph signings and stuff like that at the conventions and stuff?
Yeah, not a lot of people are interested. And now...
Well, I don't think they know you're around. I think a lot of people thought you were dead.
I did one a couple weeks, like a month and a half ago or something. I did one. Now with my... I'm afraid that if I get on a plane or something, something's going to happen. Like, I'm not going to know where I'm going or something.
I hear you.
That's happening too much now, you know, to where, like, I wake up in bed and it takes me a while to figure out where I am, what I'm doing. And that's all in places that are...
familiar.
No, yeah, familiar to me.
Yeah.
And the first thing that people assume will be that I'm on drugs, and that's all I need. I rested in Toledo, and some drug episode, you know.
Yeah.
And so to where, like, my neck is so bad. I talked to Paul a couple years ago about, you know, giving me a job.
Yeah,
and he offered me something at the developmental center, which I love doing. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually pretty good at teaching these guys, you know.
Yeah,
I couldn't pass the physical for the company.
You have to pass the physical just to train guys.
Just to be an employee of the company, you have to pass the physical. And my neck is so bad, you know. And before I was getting the symptoms of the traumatic brain injury, you know.
Is the brain injuries from wrestling, from drugs, from a combination?
I think it's from all wrestling. Yeah. Like, there's no link to that and drug use.
Right.
But there's a link to the concussions. Mm. And let's be honest, who knows how many concussions any one of us has had?
Absolutely.
Right? Who knows?
Especially from our generation of 80s and 90s, because we didn't know. Remember, we used to take chair shots with your head.
It's just the
way it was, you know?
I did a spot all the time where I'd have you take the chair and throw it as hard as you could flat at me.
Right.
And I did that in... Let's think about all the hardcore matches in WCW and just
ECW. Yeah.
Just that was a big finish in our time.
Right.
The chair shot, you know, and none of us took time off. I laugh like I'm a big NFL fan, and I'm assuming that they must have some sort of comfortability or something with the players to where their concussion protocol, where the players don't just lie and say, no, I'm fine.
Because,
I mean, how could you tell?
Yeah, but, and that's not a company telling us to do that. That's just how it was. We just did that on our own, right?
Yeah,
that's what we're saying. Like,
I'm not blaming anyone.
I know, and I'm not either. Yeah. I'm just saying that's just how we came into the business, how the business was. And now more than ever, thank God that they finally have these restrictions and stuff. Because before, we're just going out there and just doing whatever you want.
I would tell you, with that spot I would do with the chair, I would tell you, throw that chair as hard as you can. Make sure you throw it flat. And if you don't throw it as hard as you can, I'm going to be pissed.
Yeah.
And I would generally be pissed.
Yeah.
Because was a great pop. You throw that thing, and it makes such a huge noise. And it really didn't hurt me as long as it was flat.
Yeah.
But who knows what it really was doing. I was taking the chair shot.
Right.
Or just, how about, Chris, all the nights when we would take big bumps. Every bump has got to be a little rattle on the brain, right? So if I take a really bad bump and I hurt my, I got this concussion and I don't realize it, for the next 2 weeks, I'm still taking bumps,
sure,
which has got to be a little rattle.
When you don't realize it.
Yeah, right. I got Booker T knocked me out once with doing the Harlem Hangover.
Oh, yeah, the big flipping leg drop
right?
From the top rope, yeah.
That's the only time I was ever knocked out. I'm sure that wasn't the only time I've had a concussion.
Yeah. I mean, look at what happened with Chris in 2007. How much of an advancement there's been in that sort of injury and those sort of issues since then. And 10 years from now, even more so. Because it's uncharted waters right now as far as head injuries goes. You know, we don't know.
The migraine is unreal. You know, when you get, I have medicine with me. I have to carry it with me everywhere. Because if that starts to come, if I don't take this medicine right away, you can't move. You can't
do nothing.
It's unbearable.
Brutal.
Yeah. Right. And so, you know, that and emotionally, like my biggest problem emotionally is I feel frustrated all the time. You know, so, which is a very annoying, like, you know, like I just feel like, oh, like, and for no reason. So, you know, and I've read and seen, like, Dave Dewerson was a football player for the Chicago Bears, part of Mongol's defense, you know. He was on that defense, and he committed suicide because he was depressed all the time. You know what I mean? So
I've read about that. Yeah,
they all have different. Like I'm not depressed, thank God, but I feel frustrated. Like just something's not right. I can't get it. You know, and so and I like that would be horrible if that was depression instead of frustration, right? So.
Well, let's talk about some happier stuff because there's a couple more things I want to talk to you about. Tell me about because we were mentioning when you go come to WWE, and you know your work rate is there, but then they always put a spin on it. I think one of my favorite things that you did was the whole Moppy angle. Tell me about Moppy and how that went because well, it got over.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? It's so
I had to match with Mike Bell, who's a good guy.
Yeah.
Just by shit luck, maybe my fault, maybe his fault, maybe a combination, maybe just shit luck. He hip tossed me and put me right on top of my head. You know, where you take the bump and you get the flash of light? I fed up and he arm dragged me
right
on top of my head. Now, the next thing I remember or can realize, I have him in the corner and I am just pounding on him.
Yeah.
I think to myself, you know, Perry, you better calm down. So I grab him and just push him, try to push him out of the ring. Well, he takes a bump out and gets hung up and goes straight down on top
of his head. He falls on his head, yeah.
Yes, he did.
I remember that.
What I did shouldn't have happened, but there's no Vince and I argued about this. There's no possible way that I can guarantee that it wouldn't happen again because I didn't intentionally do it. I was out, and that was just my natural instinct, you know, like, oh. And my explanation is I hit my head, and I was out on my feet, didn't know what I was doing. That's the whole Moppy angle. It is. That's the Moppy angle. The acolytes power bomb me, and they debated on a mop. They thought maybe a plunger. They couldn't even decide what. But finally, one of them came up with me carrying the mop, and saying all this stupid shit that I absolutely hated.
Like what would you have to say?
Let me think. Crash Holly and
Molly.
Molly.
Yeah.
We're going to kiss. And just as they kiss, I stick my face in there and they kiss my cheeks. I said, oh, something like, monkeys learn sign language so they can tell dolphins they love them.
You just spelled out random.
But they would tell me what to say, you know.
Right,
but it
right.
was just so, it got over.
It did get over.
We were in the Meadowlands. And I was always got along really well with Pat, you know, Pat Patterson. And he always taught, I like Pat a lot, you know. Pat come up to me and he goes, gimmick. He goes, you hear the people? And I go, yeah, they're chanting Rocky. He goes, listen, gimmick. They were chanting Moppy before the show. Moppy, Moppy. It got over. And then they killed it too soon. Once it got over, they should have ran with it. I always wanted to be this serious, you know. But no, this was over, man. At one show in Scranton, PA, or Schenectady, New York, a kid showed up dressed as Moppy. Had the mop hair in it. Was a phenomenal job. They made one Moppy t-shirt, which I got. And they got rid of it, you know, because they didn't write a story for it. And I was asked, what do we do with it? And I said, throw it in a wood chipper, because I didn't want to do it. You know, I carried that mop everywhere with me. everywhere. I carried it on the planes with me, everything. You know what I mean?
I remember that you had it with you on the plane, like as if you're working.
Everywhere I would sit it. At this time point, Dean was retired. He was the agent. So I was riding by myself. I would put it in the passenger seat belted in.
But so did you not like this at first?
I hated it. I wanted to be serious.
Right.
You know, and I was wrong. Hey, I've been wrong a bunch of times. I have no problem admitting when I was wrong. That thing got over. I'd still 99 out of 100 times prefer to be serious.
Mm-hmm.
But it got over.
Did you start understanding that towards the end and embracing it?
Yeah, absolutely. By the time we got rid of it, I understood, and it was over.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So, but that's it was a punishment type thing. You know, you can see where it was done, like just to zing me, you know, not like this major punishment, but just a little jab.
A little rib, yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean? To where it wasn't some big plot to ruin my life.
Yeah.
It was just a little rib that the boys can appreciate. Mm-hmm. And I spent so much time... like no negotiating against it, that by the time it got over and nobody came up with anything new, they got rid of it. You know, it was over. I would have kept it.
You should have embraced it and kept going with it. Yeah.
Any independent matches I did after WWE, I did with that character.
Mm.
What do? You laugh, you run in a circle a few times, you get heat on me and I blow a comeback. Mm. It was so easy.
Yeah.
You know, like, my narrow-mindedness, I wanted to be serious. I felt, I don't know what, that's got to be mm-hmm. some sort of...
But that's how you came into the business. You know,
yeah,
like I said, it's hard to embrace the WWE way of doing things sometimes, which is you have this entertainment side.
Yeah, it's got to, you know? Like, not wanting to be a joke,
mm-hmm.
I couldn't see the humor in it.
I gotcha.
You know, and I was dead wrong. That was honestly the best gimmick I ever had. If it had... tremendous potential.
Mm-hmm.
Tremendous potential. But by the time I embraced it, the rib was over.
Was
they
done.
Were done ribbing me. And they had...
Raven?
Raven put it... You know, I mean, like, Terry made me choose between her and the mop, and I chose the mop and all that. You know what I mean? It had...
It had some legs.
Pat wanted me to marry the mop, and it, by this time... I was embracing it, and I would have married the mop gladly.
Oh, man. As we get ready to wrap up, let's talk a little bit about when we first met up in Japan working for Tenru and NWAR. Great
yeah,
times.
Yeah, I loved working for Tenru, too.
Yeah.
Loved working for Tenru, man.
He was a good boss. We had a lot of characters that came through there. I still remember this day, Bob Backlund. He had that little...
I was... you know what? I'm writing my book. I mean, it's like... it's almost done, and I had to go back over, like, I'm going over some stuff I missed, and I had to go back, and, like, I wanted to make sure I got the Cronus Backlund story in there. Do you remember?
Please tell me. I remember. Please tell me.
Okay, first of all, it was right after they had that huge earthquake in Osaka and stuff. So we were on the bus 20 hours a day, remember?
Yeah.
Because they were all, and... it was in July or something.
Because there was like rerouting and detours.
Yeah, all the
and,
streets were torn
yeah,
up.
Yeah, destroyed, yeah.
It was like 95 degrees on the bus. John is sitting on the bus in his underwear. Backlund comes down in his three-piece suit, and he walks up to Tenru, and he goes, "Excuse me, Mr. Tenru." He goes, "It's a little warm, so I hope you don't mind. I undid my top button." That entire time, he was only in the suit or the towel with the...
Yeah, with a little bow tie.
Yeah, yeah, the suit with the bow tie yeah. or the bathrobe with the towel wrapped around his neck and
yeah.
stuff. And it was so hot.
Yeah.
So that somewhere in that tour, Bob he was really illiterate at one time in his life. So he takes it very serious. Learning, and every day he learns three new words and he gets them in conversation throughout the day. And he has a dictionary that says the word and gives the definition.
A speaking dictionary, yeah.
And but he's explaining to John what he's doing, you know, and he explains how important it is to be able to speak. He goes, you know, like, of course, Winston Churchill was the greatest orator of all times. And then Bob goes, well, I'm sorry, John, you probably don't know what an orator is, if I'm saying that correctly. And John goes, whoa, I don't know who Winston Churchill is. Beckley didn't talk to him the rest of the tour.
And this is John Cronus, your old partner. Yeah. Yeah, I remember that. You probably don't know what an orator is. I don't even know who Winston Churchill is, Bob. Woo!
But he said and everything, because he not meaning to be vulgar or anything.
Yeah.
It was just his.
He was just a big kind of goofy kid, wasn't he, right?
That tour, Warlord was there, and we were all trying to sleep. Remember, we were on the bus 20 hours some of them days. Hopping, bopping, doing all kinds of shit and making all kinds of noise. No one could get sleep. Yeah. So Warlord halcyons John's beer. Finally, we all slept, but John.
Yeah, I remember how sad he was one time when he was eating a steak. He's like, this steak's pretty good. I said, chances are it could be cat meat.
Yeah.
And he was just like, don't say that. Please don't say that. Like, just a big, but I think that was like one of his first tours ever. He had just been in the business.
Well, we worked. Here's the deal with John. John had one match.
Mm-hmm.
Me and Paul Levesque were going to Memphis. So right before we were going to leave for Memphis, Paul got the job at WCW. I wanted to split the living expense with somebody, you know, and John was there at Walters. He only had one match, though, but I knew John. He worked at a bar I worked at and stuff. So I presented me and John to Lawler as a team, you know, that we've worked together a couple years, blah, 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 blah. And so John's first match was that he had a singles match somewhere for Walter. His next match was on Memphis television with me, you know? So we worked down in Memphis for 9 straight months, and then we went from Memphis to Tenor.
Right. So he wasn't as, because you guys had great chemistry. That was the thing.
Yeah, yeah.
He was kind of a natural right off the bat.
Absolute, incredible athlete. People that, like, because you see him and his personality and everything, you wouldn't think so. But he's a great athlete.
Yeah, yeah.
Great athlete, man. Such a good guy. And, you know, and he liked everybody, you know. And if he didn't like you, you're something really not like Vampiro. He didn't like Vampiro.
What about Grease? Tell me about Grease on the bus.
Oh, and we would... That one particular tour, that's not an exaggeration. We were on the bus like 20 hours, you know, and we'd watch the videos, you know. We'd see Tiger Chung Lee's movie. He'd be sleeping as soon as his part was over. And then we'd put something else in. And we were, if I don't know if you remember, we were literally singing the songs and stuff on the bus, having a great time. We're like very adolescent, whatever. It didn't matter. We were having a good time doing it.
I remember
it,
they put a karaoke machine on the bus once, and we were singing Grease songs from my recollection, because we even had Tenru singing them.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Because he knew it too.
Right. Yeah, we had, the deal there was Tenru was great to us.
Yeah.
Any bus trips he didn't make and his brother-in-law made, the brother-in-law was an asshole.
Right.
Didn't stop to get his food or anything.
Yeah.
But Tenru was a good guy. I really like Tenru. Remember, we had it was me, you, and John against Tenru and two other guys. I don't remember who the other two guys were. And Tenru came in and booted John. And John just whipped his hair back. And what do you call it? Next thing you know, Tenru booted John. And you go, oh, I bet he'll sell the boss next time.
Oh, good times, man. Dude, last question. If you tell me something, if you could pick your favorite match that you ever had, or a couple of your favorites, does one pop into your head?
Well, I have one match that by far I feel was my best match. It was... in Winston-Salem, I don't remember the pay-per-view for WCW. It was me against Raven, and if I won, the flock was sent free.
That was good?
Yeah, that was an outstanding match. That was a match that everywhere we thought we were going to get a reaction, we got it. You know what I mean? Like, that was a match I watched that, and I think, I used to have a little bit of talent, you know. Like that's a kind of match. Like
I love. I would have loved to have seen you and Scotty putting that match together, because I'm sure it wasn't easy between the two of you guys trying to decide how to put it together.
Well,
you're shaking your head. Oh my God!
Because you know we worked two pay-per-views up to this match.
Yeah.
So he was putting it together for 2 months, you know. And you know, with Scotty, we had every member of the flock doing something. It was a whole everything.
Run-ins and kick out.
Canyon was handcuffed to the ring apron and everything. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was just a good. Yeah, and I like Scotty was the best worker you're going to work with, or the worst worker.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There was a match. I always bring it up because I have video proof of it. There's a match. It was a three-way. Me and Scotty against Chris and Dean against Kidman and Mysterio. I don't know what was up Raven's ass. It was a 34-minute match. I was in the ring 31 minutes. 1 point, and I have video proof. I tag him. Before I could get out of the ring, he tagged me back in. Me swearing at him. Something was wrong and he didn't want to work. He was, and I watched the match. He beat Dean. We won the straps. So at first watching it, I thought, well, he must be doing the job. But then we went over and he took
he got the
fall.
Pin.
Yeah. And I don't remember what was mad, but I remember I argued with him in the back going over the match. And he literally, when I argued with him, I said something to like, if Lazy doesn't want to do nothing, I'll do it. So Scotty said, okay, Lazy's not going to do nothing.
You hurt his feelings.
That's no joke. I timed it and everything. It's incredible.
The one,
even Bobby Heenan said something. Why? I'm commentating.
I remember the one that you guys had when you first came into WWE. It was a 10-man tag with the Radicals and Mick Foley.
Yep.
Against, was Triple H in there and Too Cool? And
it was me, Eddie, and Dean. Not Eddie. Eddie was hurt. Me,
oh.
Dean, and Chris, X-Pac, and Hunter
against
Mick Foley, Rock, and Too Cool.
Oh, I just remember the reaction for that was off the charts.
Yeah.
It was like, I don't know if it was elimination tag or whatever, because it was right near the...
Yeah, it was. I don't know. I don't remember what if it was elimination or not. I just know that it was a big deal. Like, you know, and for your, like, one of your first matches there, you get to be put in that and see what it is when guys work together to get over.
Yes. And that was the difference, right? Great point.
Yeah, guys work together to get over. That was, you're right, Chris, yeah, that's the difference, right? Me and you are having a match, we're both over. WWE, I'm going to work as hard as I can so you get over, and you're going to work as hard as I can so I get over.
And H is doing it, and Rock is doing it, and
WCW,
Foley's doing it. Yeah,
WCW, I'm going to work as hard as I have to make sure that I stay over more than you.
Right.
It's just not...
Yeah.
They're complete selfless as can be, and
it was one of those ones where I was watching it jealous that I wasn't in it. I was like, ah. But man, it's good talking to you. I'm glad we got to do this today, dude. And
yeah, that's
22 years of knowing each other, so it's good times.
Oh, that's a long time, right?
Thanks to Perry Saturn for sharing his life with us, those amazing stories, being so open and honest about his tough battle with drugs and his subsequent sobriety. So great to see Perry clean and sober and getting his life back together, but he needs help. He has no cash. If you want to help him during this difficult time, please throw him a couple bucks at GoFundMe.com/Perry Saturn. He's dealing with a lot, as you heard. I know he'd appreciate anything you can do to help. He's a great guy, a good friend, a long-term friend. He'd give you the shirt off his back if you knew him. I'm telling that right now. GoFundMe.com/Perry Saturn. Give him some support. And speaking of support, thanks to all of you for supporting this podcast as you do twice a week. And to continue to support the show, easiest way to do that financially is to use the Talk Is Jericho Amazon links whenever you do any online shopping. You can find my Amazon links at podcastone.com. Click on the Killer Deals button at the top right corner of the page, then hit the Talk Is Jericho button. I got the Amazon links in the USA, UK, Canada. No matter what you buy on Amazon, they're going to kick back a small percentage to this show to help us cover production costs. There's no extra fees or hidden charges.
lodges, just go to podcastone.com, click on the Killer Deals button in the top right corner of the page and hit the Talk is Jericho button. You'll find all my great sponsors there as well. DDPYoga.com/Jericho. Get 25% off all DDPY merch. And when you buy a max pack or a combo pack, you get a second for 50% off the price that's already 25% off. I mean, that is a huge bargain and it is worth it mentally and physically. And then when you're done DDP Yoga, go have some great treats, some tasty treats from Blue Apron. Sign up there at blueapron.com/Jericho and get your first three meals for free with free shipping. Thank you once again for all the support. And thanks for supporting the Jericho Network. All of my shows are doing great. Beyond the Darkness has turned out to be such a big hit, though, for the Jericho Network. They're going to 5 days a week starting this Monday. That's right. You get your paranormal fix 5 days a week from Monday to Friday right here on the Jericho Network via Podcast One with Beyond the Darkness. Go hit subscribe at iTunes if you haven't already. Leave Beyond the Darkness a 5-star rating and review. And go and hit the subscribe button for all the Jericho Network shows while you're there. Hilarious Team Tiger Awesome show this week. What Hollywood blockbuster needs a reboot? We've seen Total Recall get a reboot. We've seen Amityville Horror get a reboot. They're trying to decide. What's the best one? Should it be Home Alone? I think is one of the examples they said. Go check out Gage, Truly, and Monday. Team Tiger Awesome every Sunday. Killing the Town with Storm and Cyrus every Tuesday. Cyrus has just been announced the color commentator for New Japan Pro Wrestling. Congratulations to him. His battle with Disco Inferno is increasing. He will actually be on Keeping It 100 with Conan, which is going to be here on Thursday. It's going to be huge. Got a little cross promotion going on there. So go check out all the Jericho Networks and check out the 60-second AP News headlines coming up next. And check out on Friday, going back to the paranormal, not just Beyond the Darkness, but the Talk is Jericho paranormal shows are super popular as well. And this weekend, well, this Friday, should I say, it's a creepy one. Haunted collector John Zaffis is here. He's the legit nephew of Ed and Lorraine Warren, who are the ghost hunters in The Conjuring, and he's got a lot of their artifacts that they've got over the years. Some creepy, insane stories about possessed dolls, exorcism, possessed pictures, demonic trinkets, and he's got them all in his house. Yeah. Who'd want to live in that house? It was a creepy, creepy place. John Zaffis is going to tell us all about some of the most terrifying items in his vast haunted item collection. Haunted collector John Zaffis will be here on Friday. So get ready to get the clap scared out of you. And until then, be safe, be cool, stay hard, stay hungry, and a big yeah, boy!
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at PodcastOne.com. That's PodcastOne.com.